When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Rewind to Raw. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting here with you on a Monday night. How are you, Wei?
I'm doing pretty good, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Victoria Day.
Happy Victoria Day to you, too. Any other holidays that people are celebrating on this day? Because I think this is just an Ontario thing, or at least certain provinces.
Yeah, not everyone out there, but it is acknowledged here in Ontario.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that is about it. Well, that's it. That's all I have to say.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Why bullshit? Let's get into the wrestling.
Let's dive right into it. Well, we have a few stories to go over. Few passings to note. Today, WXW was the one to put out the statement that John Klinger, who was known as a Bad Bones John Klinger, dying at the age of 40, he had actually just turned 40 last week. No cause of death was shared, but a really well-known European wrestler, primarily in Germany. He was very well associated with WXW, although had not wrestled there in several years, but largely been a mainstay in Europe, in European independent scenes over the past 20 years. He was a multiple-time champion, held all of the major titles in WXW, and you know, of all the big names that has gone through Europe, like, he wrestled like a who's who of people. He won the 16-karat gold tournament in 2008, which was, just looking at the brackets for this thing, he went through PCO, El Generico, Aris, and then Brian Danielson in the final. And, I mean, he was part of a really big match that they did in 2008 when WXW and NOAH worked together and put on this incredible card, and it included John Klinger teaming with a very young Walter / Gunther and taking on Kenta Kobashi and Goshi Ozaki. So this was after Kobashi's big GHC title run and, you know, going over to Germany and working the show, which had he worked with, you know, tons of big matches with Absolute Andy, with Ilya Dragunov. He had a lot of big matches with Chris Hero, Tommy End. And yeah, I don't know, again, what the cause of death was, but you could see a lot of tributes for him of just various people that worked with him. He was just a mainstay. He kind of got a look by TNA when they went over to Europe several times. He won their gut check in 2011, but never materialized into anything significant with the company. He seemed to be kind of that class of European wrestlers that were on the rise, but didn't get the big U.S. contract with a national company, but had been wrestling like right. He worked as recently as last week against Flash Morgan Webster. And so it's a very, very sad story about a guy who's very young at 40 years of age. So that is the first bit of news. Another passing to note is a former UFC fighter named Gene Herrera, a bit of a journeyman fighter, but he fought for the UFC four times in 2015 and 2016. And I was actually looking up some interviews of his, and there were several way that I believe you were probably shooting scrums with this guy, because the Fight Network mic flag was like right there center. Some great microphone positioning. It was the weekend of the Conor McGregor Jose Aldo fight. He fought the night before on the Tough finale, and that was his one win in the UFC. He came in, he was like an 8-0 prospect that got signed and joined their flyweight division, and lost his first fight against Ray Borg, who was like a really, you know, it was a solid flyweight, had a lot of weight cutting issues, but that was his first fight. Then he rebounded with the Joby Sanchez fight that took place in December of 2015, and then fought Ali Bagotinov, who at one point challenged Demetrius Johnson for the title. And his last fight in the UFC was a loss to Ben Wynn in 2016. Fought one more time in ACB, and then didn't fight for several years. And he did a BKFC fight in 2021. got a 14-second victory, but never did any kind of combat sports again after that. So I don't know where he was at this stage of his career, but the story on Saturday night, he was riding his motorcycle, and the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles informed TMZ that Herrera crashed into the back of a vehicle while going at a very high rate of speed. He struck a concrete barrier, and he was thrown hundreds of feet, they stated. His motorcycle went up in flames, and he was pronounced dead immediately at the scene. So he was only 33 years of age. He did have he had a 16-year-old son, and his girlfriend is 3 months pregnant. So very sad on that front as well, that he was, you know, expecting his second child. So yeah, both of those stories coming out today, just very sad to like young men passing away at like 40 and 33 respectively.
You know, you're talking about somebody our age and somebody considerably younger than us. That's incredibly sad. So our thoughts to all those affected by these losses.
Eddie Kingston did an interview with PWInsider.com, and he did give an update on his injury. In addition to the leg injury he suffered, which was a tibular fracture, he also has suffered a torn ACL and meniscus. So he's going to need surgery, and just the combination of those injuries, it's going to be quite a few months before we see Eddie Kingston again, especially requiring surgery. So it wasn't just the leg break, also the injury to his knee. So, man, he just got... a brutal injury, a series of them that he'll be out for a long time. It seemed like he was gunning to try and come back for All In at Wembley, but the timetable for that does not look realistic for an August return.
So does this indicate that he was he intended on doing Double or Nothing?
I mean, it sounds like it, yeah. It seems like the plan was to do Double or Nothing. It sounded like the way I took it was like these injuries were all sustained. Like, we know the leg break obviously happened at this event, and the knee injury, I'm assuming all of this happened in the match. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
And then we had the story from Darby Allin that, I mean, he was flat out stating he wasn't 100% when he was called. And then if you didn't hear the story, he was underneath the ring when Okada and Dax did that superplex spot. And I guess his head was raised too high and the bar smashed Darby in the head. And he's joking to the audience after they went off the air that he might have a concussion. I don't know if this guy should have been wrestling to begin with. I don't know if he's your first call you're making for a replacement, but maybe we will get an update on his status. I mean, it is Darby Allin. So, I mean, all things are possible.
Yeah, I guess I wonder how much, how often Darby Allin wrestles 100% anyway, and considering like the output that we're used to from that guy, I'm assuming he will give a Darby Allin performance even if he isn't 100%. Which I don't know how I feel about it, but you know, hopefully he's okay enough that he can rest up those injuries to a good enough point.
Well, we'll go over this Dynamite lineup in a minute because realistically, the biggest match of the week is happening on Wednesday and not any of these pay-per-views this weekend. Literally the biggest match. Mark Shapiro, he was at one of Way's favorites, the JP Morgan Global Technology, Media, and Communications Conference. If that's not a mouthful, I mean, talk about
it. Is there at least an acronym there?
The JMGTMCC. Yeah. So Mark Shapiro, he spoke about a number of different things here. First of all, we have two clips we're going to play. The first one was asked about the Netflix deal and opportunities that TKO might be able to enjoy now that they're in bed with Netflix beyond just the core programming rights.
So, you know, you mentioned Drive to Survive. So is that, you know, potentially an opportunity, right, for you to program, you know, with them? Roast of Triple H, something like that, potentially.
We can get The Rock out there to do that with us.
Yeah.
Who knows? But they will do more of those roasts. That was too much of a hit. But yes, it is contemplated in our deal. Yeah. We will do a lot of ancillary and shoulder programming. And I think the very first genre you'll see out of WWE in terms of ancillary programming will be a Drive to Survive show. That's contemplated for the first season. And we'll also do some documentaries probably on a few of our superstars.
So not just ancillary and shoulder programming, but they are going to do a Drive to Survive show. And I'm just wondering the quality of drivers that you do have in the WWE roster. Like, I would think you would want to take the concept maybe and then apply it to wrestling rather than straight Drive to Survive. But Drive to Survive has done remarkable things for F1, but every time I hear the, well, it's Drive to Survive, but for this blank. We'll see what is produced here. I have no doubt that the production is going to be very high level. And you do have an audience that I think is still hungry for this kind of behind the scenes. But I think one of the things we've seen at All Access that AEW produced was a great example of that. If it doesn't feel authentic, I don't know if your wrestling audience is really going to be craving that. But, you know, this is obviously Netflix involved, and they have a massive investment in WWE, and WWE will probably, like, you just need a real authentic feel. That's what has made the F1 version of Drive to Survive so successful.
Mm-hmm. When people say that we're going to try to make a Drive to Survive for blank, I take it just to mean we're going to make a reality series that's going to be successful enough that it might drive people to actually watch the product that it's profiling. It's at this point, you know, more of a buzzword than anything. Wrestling, WWE's own sort of like behind the scenes documentaries, they're really nothing new. Like they do them all the time. Can they do them in a way that is, appealing enough and interesting enough for a casual fan who might otherwise not watch Raw or SmackDown every single week to jump in? I mean, Total Divas was very successful for a certain demographic. Can they make something like that for a wider audience? I don't think I would look at All Access as like, you know, that much of an indicator just because of the production difference that you might expect, you know, with the WWE and with Netflix possibly being attached to it and whatever production companies that might be, you know, under their wing. So I'm very curious to see what concept this is, and I'm hoping it's going to be different from, you know, things we've seen in the past, like a Tough Enough.
Does this make a very obvious tag team pairing for Raw in the coming months if the show gets off the ground?
Gunther Steiner?
It's a match made in heaven, I think.
Gunther Breaker, you mean?
Well, for this, we may. Now they have a manager, potentially. I mean, we already have
a Gunther. Maybe he's going to have to change his name.
Okay, well, we will see. Other notes that were brought up, Mark Shapiro, very excited to take the WWE PLEs to the market. He was very complimentary towards Peacock and its growth, but noting the fact that they are constantly asked when their deals are going to be up for the PLEs seems to be indicating a lot of interest in those. On the UFC side, spoke about the potential of another performance institute opening up somewhere in the Middle East after they have built ones in Shanghai and Mexico. And these are the markets that they feel the need to create performance institutes where they really want to solidify their ties. And I think this year, it seems like the Middle East and specific Saudi Arabia is a massive area of growth for them to just pump as much money as possible into their revenue streams. He was, you'll be stunned, Way. He was heavily, heavily praising Paul Levesque, his creative genius, and Dana White. He just said, Dana White, he's a star unto himself. He's a star builder, who he equated with David Stern, the late commissioner of the NBA. Noted the fact that,
Stern a star builder?
Well, he got the, you know, when the NBA was just, you know, just trudging along. Like, there was a period, like several decades ago, where the NBA finals were airing on tape delay, and it was really the advent of Larry Bird and Magic Johnson that really took the league to another level.
What did he have to do with that?
I mean, David Stern was the commissioner, and he understood like the markets that he wanted to be in, and, you know, really marketing the players individually. So, he was someone that gets a lot of credit for the growth of the NBA during its largest periods of growth, when it was way down the totem pole of sports in the United States. But the exclusive negotiating window for the UFC and Disney begins in mid-January, and then they have 3 months. And stated that we were very happy when we entered this deal, but the fact is now we are under monetized. So take that for we are looking for massive increases when it comes to the UFC, and said that they had gotten actually very far down the road with Amazon before they licensed the UFC rights to ESPN, and said that there's a lot of options on the table. We're going to be very flexible in these negotiations, and ESPN, they're going to be launching a direct-to-consumer app in the near future where people will not need to subscribe to cable to still get ESPN. And one of Mark Shapiro's ideas would be, why doesn't ESPN just buy out our UFC pay-per-views and make that part of the direct-to-consumer inventory that you sign up for whatever it's going to be, $30 a month for this ESPN app, and that comes with the $80 pay-per-view, and ESPN is going to have to pay a fortune for those rights. But that's one of the ideas that they had. So I think they're looking at what they have now, where they're guaranteed an amount no matter how their pay-per-view performs, but they want so much more of a guarantee because of what the potential is for these pay-per-views that have grown so much over this deal. And the rest was a lot of focus on Saudi Arabia, and that's the other clip we will hear from Mark Shapiro.
You've seen us monetize site fees with the likes of Saudi Arabia for WWE. You can look for us to expand our current deal in the next 6 to 12 months. Very happy with MBS and the partnership we have there. We have two events a year, but we're already in discussions. Nick Khan is leading that for us in expanding that to more events. We also have a phenomenal deal in Abu Dhabi with the UFC, where we're getting significant site fees and incentive packages there. And we've now expanded our partnership with them for other affiliate events, if you will, in the Middle East that they would participate in as we sell them to different countries. We've now expanded our Saudi Arabia relationship by not just having a UFC fight this June, but announcing for almost double the rights fee, another event next year. And I would tell you, David, we would be doing a longer-term deal with Saudi Arabia if we already had one event under our belt. So that's another way of saying, as long as everything goes well in June, which we anticipate, I think Dana White would be very amenable to doing a much longer-term deal in Saudi Arabia.
They're very happy with MBS. Very happy.
That to me, I mean, all of this is more of an indicator of just, I think, how things are different in maybe certainly TKO or, you know, Endeavor's attitudes towards Saudi Arabia and MBS.
And the comfort level of stating these things out loud, and to mm-hmm. the community that they are speaking to, they too are receptive to, like, Saudi Arabia is no longer like coded language of large scale live events or not saying anything out loud. It's, hey, tons of money to be made, and there seems to be
no sort of political weight attached to Saudi Arabia or MBS anymore. It's strictly a way of saying money and dollars. And, you know, it you get the sense from listening to a quote like this that whatever Saudi is willing to offer, they might be willing to at least listen to and possibly accept.
So he finished up talking as well about site fees, and obviously they are looking to extract as many as possible, calling them incentive packages, where it doesn't have to be straight up cash. You can be creative in ways that you're going to reward us for bringing you these shows. Sure. And the other thing that he noted was that they're going to be starting to look for these incentive packages for not just pay-per-views for the UFC and WWE, but for Raw, for SmackDown, for Fight Nights. Like, they are going to be, and I bet that does not just mean internationally. I'm sure they are looking for, they just got a site fee for UFC in St. Louis. I'm certain that for some of the markets, like, they're going to try to bundle these together and really make these like a sales pitch to various local governments in the US, in Canada, and abroad, down to their television.
It really is impressive when you see the Endeavor machine at work, you know, in being able to take what we've been watching now for decades. And certainly this product is at a height that, you know, we probably haven't really seen in many years, but still being able to take that and to make that much more money than we've ever seen anybody make from professional wrestling is really, really incredible.
This is the Endeavor flywheel way in action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's if you had to distill this 30-minute speech into a couple of words, TKO's making a ton of bank, okay? That's mm-hmm. what Mark Shapiro, like, he was giddy talking about, like, just all this revenue.
Isn't that what these interviews are usually about?
A lot of it. It's,
to brag how much money we're making so that we might drive that stock price.
And to their credit, the market is responding well. Their stock is ticking up mm-hmm. and up and up. It's up a significant amount over the last month. They are up to, I think, today's close, $107.60. Look at the movement just over the last, if you look at the last month, they are up 13% in the last month. So this stock is driving very high, and I think there's a multiple series of events. I think the fact that the antitrust lawsuit is now that albatross that is off their shoulders, I think that has cleared the way. And I think people are realizing, and I think the fact that the NBA rights are being negotiated at such a high amount, and people are looking, well, what are the next big sports rights that are out there? The UFC qualifies as one of those. And if Warner Brothers Discovery is out of the NBA business, that's a lot of capital that they have on their hands and have a schedule to fill. And I would certainly think that they'd be at least bidding on the UFC. So their stock is doing very well. Endeavor is, they're doing okay. Marigold had their launch today at a sold-out Core Q&A Hall with Marigold Fields Forever. And on the show, it was a six-match show headlined by Saray and Bozila defeating Julia and Utami Hayashita in just over 28 minutes. And they did it. They had several announcements on the show. They introduced two title belts, a red belt, which is the Marigold World title, and the white belt, which is the Marigold United National title. And they also announced their first pay-per-view, which is going to be July 13th with Saray against Julia at Sumo Hall, airing on Wrestle Universe. And they also got a flowers sent to them for their debut on behalf of Io Sky, Kairi Sane, and Akira Tozawa as well, sending them with WWE emblazoned here on the flower spread. What did you think about this? What a nice gift.
Well, I think very interesting by the names, well, the Japanese names that might not be on that card. I guess, you know, obviously Io and Kairi you would expect because of their association with Stardom and Rossi. Akira Tozawa, I guess I'm to some sort of relationship maybe that we don't know about. But, I mean, you know, maybe nobody expected this, but Asuka, obviously the omission is, you know, more pronounced.
So on today's audio news update, I did a chat with Karen Peterson, and here is a really quick bit from that chat. The whole thing is up for all Post Wrestling Cafe members if you want to hear, but here are some of Karen's thoughts on the debut show.
It was interesting because there's so many things that they keep doing these throwback homages to within Marigold, whether it's the brand new World Championship and the United National Championship. They have a red belt and a white belt, just like Stardom did, and just like the women's promotions before them. They, you know, they went back to having banners and like streamers, and it felt like an indie without feeling like an indie, if that makes any sense. Like it was I used the phrase earlier. It was nostalgia nouveau, where it feels like it's like something old and something new all rolled in together. It felt familiar, but also felt very refreshing at the same time. In my personal opinion, there's been too much spotlight on Rossi and his movement and his departure from Stardom, and not enough spotlight on the women who chose to take a step in their career and leave Stardom, or leave Actress, or leave the independents to join Marigold. Like, the focus needs to be on the talent, and I think they did a good job of showcasing that, both with the talent in-ring, the promos they cut, the Japanese commentary, having Haru Murata, who's does play-by-play for just about everybody. Yuzuki Aikawa, Yuzupon, who was one of the founding members of Stardom. Fuka, who was a founding member of Stardom and then also went over to Actress for about 6 years. As well as, you know, Sonny Gutierrez, who works for Marigold. Him joining Stu Fulton, who does commentary for Wrestle Universe and a lot of the other, like Pancras and other the mixed martial arts in Japan. They all redirected the spotlight onto the talent, and it made all the difference.
So if you want to hear more of Karen Peterson's thoughts, she does have a full report up on the site, and she will be covering this Thursday's Hanakamura Memorial Show on the site. Best of the Super Juniors, they are going into Tuesday's show. It's a five-match show with TJP against Kosei Fujita, Clark Connors versus Bushi, Hayata versus Blake Christian, Kevin Knight against Teton, and the main event El Desperado against Yoshinobu Kanemaru. Francesco Akira is off the undercard tag portion with a knee injury that they worked in and incorporated into Sunday's match he had with Drilla Maloney, but he is still scheduled for his next block match that is Wednesday against Hiromu Takahashi. And after six nights, it's Blake Christian leading the A block with 8 points, Kushida in front of the B block with 8, while Dragon Daya, the only participant, with 0 points. But this guy is the most entertaining five-minute match wrestler going at the moment. His matches are just, he just crams them into like 5-6 minutes is what he typically gets, and he is really entertaining to watch in this tournament. What might not be too entertaining to watch is going to be July 15th when Chael Sonnen takes on Anderson Silva in a boxing fight in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
the third fight way that we have all been clamoring for all this time. Sorry, June 15th, not July 15th. It's happening sooner than we can expect. They're going to have a boxing fight. We don't know if this is an exhibition or a pro fight. Does not matter to me. Anderson Silva, 49 years old, last boxed against Jake Paul in 2022. Chael Sonnen, the fresher of the two, 47 years old, last competed in 2019. I cannot tell you how little interest I have in the idea of these two fighting again. But if you have memories of UFC 117 or 148, let's see what they can do 12 years since their last fight.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested in... I think there have been several attempts at, like, devising some form of, like, senior PGA version of, like, whatever mixed martial artists might do afterwards. There's really not as much interest in, like, an ultimately maybe safer something, like a grappling match, for instance. People want to see people punch, and I hope these two don't hurt each other so much.
What if they each did a roast for one another? That would be compelling stuff.
I mean, I think you're going to get that. That's also what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Chael Sonnen and hopefully delivering some zingers here for Anderson. And really just kind of hopefully bring back a little bit of nostalgia for those of us who remember that feud so fondly. The match itself is probably the least interesting part of it all to me.
SmackDown on Friday night, they were first for the night among network programming with 2,186,000 viewers, which was up 3% from last week, and their actual highest viewership in a month, while the demo dropped 5% to a 0.59. We don't have Canadian numbers because it is a holiday today in Canada. NXT, Tuesday night, this was a taped show from last week because of the crew that is off to Saudi Arabia, but on Tuesday night, what you are going to get is Axiom and Nathan Frazier against Luca Crisafino and Channing Stax Lorenzo, Josh Briggs, Wes Lee, and Joe Coffey, who is replacing the injured Ivar in the number one contenders match for Obafemi's North American title. Then a pair of women's North American title qualifiers with Thea Hale against Fallon Henley and Brinley Reese against Jada Parker. Shayna Baszler and Lola Vice taking on Natalia and Carmen Petrovic and Lexus King versus Dante Chen. But we look ahead to Wednesday's Dynamite, and this is the final Dynamite before the pay-per-view. We have got Katsuyori Shibata versus Hook versus Brian Keith. The winner will get an FTW title match against Chris Jericho. So I guess this sets up the long-awaited Chris Jericho-Brian Keith showdown at the pay-per-view, we would assume.
Yes, of course, yes.
Malachi Black versus Kyle O'Reilly. Konosuke Takeshita against Matt Sydal. Tony Storm and Mariah May taking on Saraya and Harley Cameron. A non-title match between Swerve Strickland and Nick Wayne. Roderick Strong and Trent Barretta taking on Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy. And in the match that I am so excited for, Bryan Danielson versus Satnam Singh.
Me too, yeah.
I can't wait to watch this thing. I am more interested in this match than maybe anything on either pay-per-view coming up this weekend. I want to just watch Bryan Danielson have a match with Satnam Singh. I am all in on this match. I think this is like the perfect television match that I want to see on Dynamite.
Yeah, I think so too. Legitimately, you know, I think we all admire somebody like Bryan Danielson and his creativity. I think he's always talked about wanting to wrestle a bear. This is probably the closest we'll get to it. I want to see how he creatively navigates the limitations and the strengths of somebody like a Satnam Singh. I think it promises to be different from any of the other matches he's had in AEW. And I think Satnam can deliver. You know, obviously a lot of expectations on him, but this will be a match I'm sure will be tailor-made for what he does well. And it's a way that we can see Danielson do something a bit different.
And if they're really smart, they should put this whole match up on YouTube just for the numbers they'll generate in India. And I am so curious to see how this is received in India that on Wednesday night, I may enable my NordVPN and assign my geography to India.
Very well done, John. Whether or not you host a wrestling podcast, it can be difficult keeping up with every show as a wrestling fan. A must-have in our viewing process here at Post is access to AEW Plus, a service only available in the US and Canada through a trusted VPN like NordVPN. All editions of Dynamite and Rampage and Collision Live without dealing with the TV network's buggy app and extra fees, watch matches commercial-free, pause and rewind live, and access shows on demand as soon as the event ends. But my favorite use of a VPN like Nord's is the ability to unlock cheaper prices for pay-per-views in other countries. In the US, purchasing Double or Nothing will cost you about $50, but switching your location to the UK using NordVPN allows you to purchase the event for half the price at $25, $20 if you're an AEW Plus subscriber. A NordVPN subscription costs less than $3 a month when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, where you get 4 bonus months on top of all 2-year plans. So you're essentially spending $3 to save at least $25. Again, sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling. They even have a 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Visit our link, get your bonus months, and tell Nord you found them through us.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
There's no double in Double or Nothing. It's half off or I'm going home.
Ooh, wow. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Thank you to our good friends at NordVPN. Tonight, we're moving on to Raw. Actually, before we talk about Raw, quick plug for this coming week. If you're doing some catch-up, the NWA podcast, cool 25% of your day can be dedicated to their latest show, clocking in at 6 hours with the whole crew, plus guest Jesse Collins is on in the first hour with them.
Yeah, very interesting chat from those guys. what I loved about it, and I haven't listened to all 6 hours yet, but I've heard enough at this point to know that Nate Milton will not pass at any opportunity to reference Kendrick Lamar and Drake. He will, like, we're promising, I want to say, like, a reference for every 10 minutes of the 6-hour podcast. He is a master at it at this point. I think he goes through his daily conversation referencing lines from that feud.
It was, it's sprinkled throughout the show. I am about 2.5 hours into this show. As Andrew checks in at like hour 3 and he still is, or hour 2, and he still manages to be on for 4 hours. So you get the full NWA experience. And again, Jesse Collins on the show. Always great to hear.
Great chat
from Jesse. Later on this week, we've got the wellness policy on Tuesday. What is on tap for those that are tuning in on Tuesday?
Open phone calls, open lines, whatever you guys want to talk about. 12:30 p.m. Eastern time at youtube.com/postwrestling. It'll be me, Jordan Neal, just having a chat. And if you guys want to get in on the conversation, look for the link in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
On Wednesday, Brandon and I will be live at 3 p.m. Eastern time, and we'll probably be taking a deeper look at WWE's latest return to Saudi Arabia and working out some things for that show. And Thursday, it is Rewind Away at postwrestlingcafe.com. This week, we are chatting Extreme Rules 2012 from Chicago, which features Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, Brock's first match in WWE since coming back after his UFC run. Pretty famous match that year in terms of Brock Lesnar, his return, and presenting a very different type of match than typical WWE standard. Plus, a Chicago street fight involving CM Punk and Chris Jericho, and Brodus Clay versus Dolph Ziggler. This card has it all.
I was excited to watch this until you said that.
Well, there's there's quite the undercard before we get into the meat of the show. But that's coming up on Thursday, and we'll have all of the headlines from that week in 2012. We'll go through those and a full review of Extreme Rules. And then this weekend, Saturday, we're coming at you 3 days in a row with SmackDown in Saudi Arabia. We'll be live that night. Saturday, after King and Queen of the Ring, and Sunday night, AEW Double or Nothing.
Every single day. And don't forget Collision Course with John and Kate. Those two have done quite the month of 3 hour collisions / rampages. They get some reprieve this Saturday with a 2 hour edition of Collision.
Now we move on to Raw. At the Greensboro Coliseum, the site of Sting's retirement back in March, WrestleTix, their latest figure, 9,750 tickets distributed. So this was slightly down from the last time WWE ran here for a Raw last May, which did just over 10,000. But, you know, AEW, I mean, they did around like 16,000 for Sting's retirement, and they did do a $1 million gate for that particular show as well. For the television side of things, Raw certainly has the ability to pick up some ground because there was no NBA tonight on the schedule, and it's Game 7 between the Vancouver Canucks and Edmonton Oilers, which might be over as we speak, which is not going to be as big a deal in the U.S., but in Canada, that's going to be a giant number. Actually, there's 50 seconds left in the gameway, and Edmonton's up 3-2.
Shout. Well, 50 seconds in hockey and really any sport can take like Vancouver, 5 minutes.
They pull the goalie. I bet they tie it. That's my prediction.
10 seconds.
Oh, is it over? Is Vancouver done?
Well, they're probably pausing the game for, I don't know, last timeout.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the show as Vancouver just holds their head in mourning of their team being out. Sami Zayn comes out to start the show. And he notes that he's got this triple threat with Bronson Reed and Chad Gable. He's got a personal issue with Gable and a professional one with Bronson Reed. And this is a fight involving mind, body, and soul. The mind of Chad Gable, the body of Bronson Reed, and Sami Zayn represents the soul. And if he's a betting man, he's putting his money on soul every time because he's the champion. And that's how he beat Gunther, with his soul. So Gable comes out with Alpha Academy. He takes credit for coaching Zayn to beat Gunther and said, "I've been too nice to you and these three clowns behind me." And he berates Maxine for getting eliminated from the Queen of the Ring, Tozawa failing to do any damage to Bronson Reed last week, and then gets to Otis, who the crowd is just getting more and more into each week and chanting for him, and says, "Otis is the biggest disappointment on the planet. The entire human race. The basement is occupied by Otis."
Well, to Chad Gable, who's to say he's wrong?
I mean, he didn't say biggest disappointment in wrestling, just biggest disappointment on the planet.
I mean, you don't know what Chad Gable's feelings on the world is.
Okay, well, Zayn asks Alpha Academy, "How long are you guys going to listen to this crap?" Gable says, "You don't get to speak to them. I'm going to take your title, and I'm going to take your soul." And Zayn wants them to have their match right now, and that takes us to our opener, a non-title affair between Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. And we had some long matches on this show, starting with this one that clocked in at 16 minutes. And so throughout the match, Gable would distract the referee, and each person on Alpha Academy was left to strike Sami Zayn from behind. And Maxine couldn't bring herself to do it, so then Gable uses her as a shield, and then he regains the advantage. Then Tozawa won't deliver a cheap shot either. So Gable calls them failures, and he ejects the two, and it just leaves Otis in the corner. And as they're going to the commercial break, we get the latest QR code that, again, I'm done with these things. It took me to a bloody survey.
Yeah, I don't really ever... Did you actually put your phone up for the QR code?
I did, yeah.
I never do that. I just, like, go to Twitter to see what other people have found at this point. And people found a lot of different things, but the coolest thing that I saw somebody find was... So there were, like, little audio bits that somebody could find through the survey. And if you put the audio bits through spectrogram, some sort of audio thing, you can see the
readings. These are all things I love doing during a commercial break of my favorite show.
I guess the idea is for you to not watch Raw and do this instead. But
here's
but
your
when
work
when you put it through this sort of audio meter, it shows you photos, and one of the photos is like Uncle Howdy. You could see the word hello. You could see, like, I don't know, a bunch of cool shit. So this is fun if you choose to dive in.
Okay.
And you don't care.
No, no, I don't. So the Huluva kick gets stopped with an ankle pick, and then he goes to the ankle lock. Zayn gets to the rope, and then he's tossed to the floor, and Otis is looking over Zayn, but he can't bring himself to attack Zayn. So Gable screams in his face and gives him another massive slap. Then Gable grabs the IC title, runs in, and he's stopped with an exploder and is sent into the corner. The Huluva gets prevented when Otis finally gets on the apron and attacks Sammy, and it leads to the Chaos Theory as Gable wins in 16 minutes and 7 seconds as Otis looks conflicted and Gable celebrates with the crowd chanting, "You suck."
Yeah, I thought they effectively told the match-long story here, and if you just listen to the reaction, it's a very simply told story, almost as basic like a children's story in the way they establish like a pattern using this rule of three. But simple works, especially in professional wrestling, especially with the WWE. Huge reactions for the Gable slap towards Otis, and an even bigger reaction for Otis giving in and finally attacking Sammy. So, you know, it gives Gable a win heading into the pay-per-view. It continues to carry this very sympathetic Otis storyline forward. I think very effectively done.
So then Michael Cole and Pat McAfee, they had to break from the format and address the elephant in the room. These QR codes, I mean, Pat, like, we saw the video on Friday with the psychoanalyst. They're now talking about the content of the videos as well. Yeah. I mean, it's getting very, it's just getting very, hey, we're doing this. Like, just basically, you know what, guys? We've actually got the footage here that we're just going to air now in case you didn't catch that QR code.
Yeah. Well, we spoke about this on Friday. Maybe partially it's due to this round of QR codes not really generating the same amount of buzz as the White Rabbits did originally. Or it could just be... ultimately, we all know what this is building up to. We're trying to build anticipation for the arrival of Bo Dallas and whatever, you know, band is going to be joining him. Whatever gets the message across. You know, there's such a thing as maybe being too subtle.
Then we had this Io Sky video with subtitles where she is submerged underwater and states that she has dominated everyone in her way. She's been champion, but now she is ready for the crown. Everyone will bow down on Raw. Lyra has flown too close to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Redmond is with Alpha Academy, but before they can even answer, she's got more important things to do because there's a crash in the background and she chases down this breaking story where Cruz del Toro has been attacked. And later we would learn this was at the hands of Carlito.
Yeah. So his hand was already injured. And I guess in storyline in universe, it was because of Ridge Holland shutting the door on him in NXT.
Well, we had to assign new responsibility for this injury, so we've updated it. Now it's Carlito.
Basically, yeah. Like, that was convenient for Ridge at the time in NXT, but Ridge Holland is not a main roster character, and they are basically recrediting. This is almost like a bit of a retcon. They're recrediting the arm injury now to Carlito.
Cruz was just cleared this morning. This is such a setback.
That would have been actually wonderful, which that might actually be the story they're dealing with Woods.
Perhaps it could be, yes.
Yeah.
Bron Breakker comes out, and this poor guy, Cale Dixon, you've seen him on Level Up and the NXT live events, and when I say this guy had to be like the ping pong ball for Bron Breakker, I mean, his job was to go out there and get murdered by Bron Breakker for 2 minutes. And Cale Dixon, he's in the corner, and Bron just like psychs himself up in the corner, turns around and spears this man. You want to talk about Sami Zayn's soul? I saw Cale Dixon's soul just evaporate through his nostrils and into the air in Greensboro. And then Cale Dixon is tossed to the floor, and Bron Breakker sprints around the ring. He runs at this guy at a rate of speed that I don't care how trustworthy I was in the man delivering this, I would be scared out of my mind taking this spear. There are going to be dudes that just, their heads are going to rock off the floor. Now, I think Dixon was okay, but the speed at which Breakker hit him and coming around the ring too, oh my God, he just killed this guy. And they did the stoppage, which the audience was not ready for a stoppage finish. They actually booed the finish at a minute 53, although I've never had an issue with the stoppages.
I think it's a reaction that's to be expected, that they were going to make up for with the physicality afterwards.
So he runs the ropes, he spears this poor guy again, and then attacks him with a chair, and they have to stretcher him out. And
Hold on a second. You missed like the spot. Did you not see this? They put Cale Dixon's head into the
Cale Dixon. Yes, that should be his name.
They put his head into the sort of groove, the angled like interior groove of the stairs, and Bron Breakker comes over with a steel chair. And it's actually a really neat spot. You know, they cut the camera immediately on impact so that it looks like he's actually hitting him.
The angle they did with Von Wagner, where he had to relearn how to walk after.
Did they do this specific spot?
I think the lights went out when he hit him, but it was similar.
Okay. Anyway, it looked great, you know? So this is a really interesting way that they're presenting Bron. I mean, first of all, what a tan on this man. Okay.
Dude, like, he was,
he went to Pasta Mania to get this tan. They are promoting this guy, not like they're really emphasizing his speed through this, like really fast spear that they're allowing him to showcase in multiple ways. And they're also giving him like this really angry gimmick where he's just so angry that he's not booked in the King of the Ring. He's he's out to kill, like commit murder, basically.
Dude, if you weren't booked in the King of the Ring,
you know, like that's it. Yeah. So it's different. I like it. I think it's making Bron feel special, which is ultimately the effect that you're looking for. It's making the audiences completely captivated at what this guy's about to do. And we all know, like, maybe in a prior, like, I don't know, era, doing this sort of thing to a defenseless jobber would be seen as a heel move. But these days, I mean, it's just cool, isn't it? And we want to cheer for the guy who's doing the cool shit. So I think it's really getting him some good attention as a attractive top baby face.
Do you think we'll ever get an update on Cale?
Maybe this is all a setup, you know, maybe WrestleMania 45, Cale will finally get his revenge.
Well, Dixon is taken out on a stretcher and Adam Pearce is tending to him when Kiana James runs up and just gets blown off here, and they take him off in the ambulance, and then Pearce confronts Bron Breakker. And Bron informs him, "This is on you, Pierce, for not putting me in the King of the Ring." And Pierce is like, "Are you serious? This is the hill you're willing to die on? The King of the Ring?"
That motivation, I don't really love either. It's kind of, it kind of makes what Bron's doing like really feel like overkill. I wish they gave him a better reason for why he's on this sort of rampage, you know. Like what could it be?
This is how Jack Perry should have returned to AEW, being pissed about not being booked for 3 months.
Yeah, AEW. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So they're giving Bron like an Austin gimmick almost right away. Let's see if the audience takes to it.
I think he's going to turn himself babyface. Like he's just too entertaining.
He's already a babyface.
Like, he's just a kick ass.
This is a babyface push.
It is. And it's going to translate very, very effectively. Becky Lynch gives a pep talk to Lyra Valkyria, and that takes us to our first semifinal match with Lyra and Io Sky, clocking in at 19 minutes that they went here. Lyra went for a European clutch at one point. Sky turned it into a crossface. Sky picked up a bloody nose here at the midway point. After an acai moonsault by Sky, she stops a tornado DDT. They go through a second commercial. And then after Sky misses the double knees, then Lyra hits the tornado DDT successfully. Sky returns, hits the double knees over the moonsault, misses on several occasions. And then Sky tries for the sunset bomb, but then Sky collapses, can't get over, and gets up over the moonsault, but Lyra rolls away. The Nightwing gets countered, and then Sky goes for the sunset, and Lyra doing the bulldog Brett finish here with the hook, with the legs being hooked, and just leans down. 19 minutes, 16 seconds. Lyra Valkyria gets the win.
I thought this was a really strong match bell to bell. Not very high on crowd response, but the in-ring content I thought was really strong. Great counters, great callbacks to things that were done earlier in the match, things that worked the first time but didn't the second time, or didn't work the first time and worked the second time they went back to it. I think Io has been wrestling really, really well since Mania. You know, she's just like wrestled a lot faster and has become a lot more dynamic for whatever reason. But for Valkyria to kind of like be able to go at the same pace, I think it really shows you how good Lyra Valkyria is, which is all you could probably ask for out of a tournament like this for a newcomer like her. So they're clearly, you know, using this as a vehicle to try to put her into the spotlight, possibly even giving her the entire tournament at the end, but certainly putting her in the finals itself is more of a vote of confidence than anything to show you that this is somebody that the audience should be paying attention to. In ring, she's great. But as a personality, I mean, she just simply does not have that connection yet. I think the promos at this point have sounded very generic, if not almost a bit insincere. She is missing a bit of authenticity to her voice and really a unique personality, I would say, at least on, you know, from what we've seen thus far in the main roster.
In fairness, her ability to convey any kind of personality was driven by the following question. Lyra, could you have imagined this 3 weeks ago before you were drafted? No, I could not have imagined this 3 weeks ago, but I am one Nightwing away from becoming Queen of the Ring. I'm with you. Like they are obviously putting a lot into Lyra Valkyria, but if you are just the raw viewer here, and I would even extend this, like, it's not like the NXT run she had this grand depth to her either. Like the defining characteristic is I was born in the same country as Becky Lynch.
Yeah, that was about the most interesting that I felt, was when like they were telling the story in connection with her and Becky, and like, you know, going to that seminar that Becky Lynch was also at. But even that's a type of character that we've seen so often. You know, I've trained really hard, now I'm here. Oftentimes when it comes to like baby faces, it's going to require a heel turn in order to drag something like that out. And maybe we'll eventually get that with her pairing with Becky against Becky on the main roster.
I think this is probably where we're going. I think Lyra should win this tournament. And I think that sets up Becky and Lyra as whether it's Clash at the Castle or something else.
Yeah, would be an interesting way of going about it. So, does this give you any indication about who will win the SmackDown side of things?
I think that I kind of feel, just based on Paul Levesque's history of booking these tournaments, that I think he likes to put the two like baby faces together, and it's more of a like 50-50 split, and could see them doing Bianca and Lyra in the final.
Bianca and Lyra, though, will not be a 50-50 split. I think it'll be an audience that'll cheer for Bianca over Lyra. And is that the type of overshadowing you want for a brand new baby face?
I wouldn't be concerned about that. If the audience leans one way, that's fine. I think the idea is to go out there and have like a really incredible match together. I mean, you could go, if you are, then you do have Nia as the more traditional matchup, but and you do have kind of the out with Bianca with this knee injury as well, that could be played as something coming out of this. I think it's the more interesting match, but the safe option, I guess, is Nia.
Yeah, I see Nia winning myself.
So then we have R-Truth and Miz with the new Catch Republic, and Miz comes in. They need to focus. They're facing Balor and JD McDonagh, and Truth says his buddy Andre the Giant has their back, and Miz explains that he died in 31 years ago, and he has no idea what he's talking about, but Truth says to trust him. This would actually have a bit of a clever payoff, as much as you can apply the word clever to this. Braxton is with Ilya Dragunov and has asked for a prediction on the King of the Ring. And he said he is frustrated, but there is no shame in losing to Jey Uso. And I think on the scale of 1 to 10, his intensity was like a 28 here. So dialed down a bit to give a match prediction. And then he says he's basically stating there's no shame in losing to Jey Uso. Who is the main event? Jey Uso. He's like screaming at me. And Ricochet walks in.
The man flew here, okay? He was going to make sure that plane ticket was worthwhile.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be like a game we play on these shows. Like, who had to travel the longest to do the absolute least on this show? Yeah. Ilya was up there. Ricochet walks in and says that the two of them set the bar pretty high. But just because you got the best of me once doesn't mean this is over. And then Braun ended it. He came in and killed this guy, spearing Ricochet onto the equipment. And Ricochet was grabbing his ribs and had to be taken care of. And Adam Pearce is just watching over his fallen roster at the hands of Braun Breaker.
So, I mean, it's not like they've kind of made Ricochet, you know, just kind of this lowly ranked guy over the past few months. I feel like, you know, as speed champion, whether or not that means anything, but like he's somebody of prominence. So I don't anticipate this just being Braun attacking a random person backstage who will never get that revenge. I think Ricochet will face Braun Breaker and probably get killed in an actual match.
Braun should be the speed champion.
If you told me this guy was
going to have 3-minute matches every week, I'm tuning into that show each week to watch Braun.
I think it's a great idea. Like, he should just like kill guys in 3 minutes. That's a wonderful reason for me to tune into, you know, a Twitter show. So maybe that's what this is setting up, but it's also interesting to see them like bounce multiple programs for all these guys. You know, Dragunov is obviously targeting Gunther, but Ricochet also wants to face Dragunov. Now you have Braun Breaker also wanting to face Ricochet as well. Well, Braun not really wanting to face Ricochet, I guess, more so just setting up a match.
I think he's going to just bypass Ricochet altogether. Then we go to an empty arena earlier in the day, and there is Gunther, and he refers.
You already know this is going to be
amazing. Oh, dude, just the sight, and then he starts putting up his arms, simple gestures for simple people, and he says, "Jay became the hottest thing going, and later tonight, this arena will be full of people raising their arms and trying to fill it with hope and delusion, but I am in the business of eliminating hope." He says, "When Jay faces me, it's not about who is more exciting and who is the showman." That he needs a shirt, not a showman. "But I am superior to Jay, and I will be the King of the Ring."
I love this guy.
This man needs a book on tape, okay? I don't ever want to read his autobiography. I only want to hear it.
He is also another guy, not unlike a Will Ospreay, where, I mean, we always knew he was among, if not the best, you know, wrestler in the world. But who would have thought on the microphone in this sort of like WWE style of storytelling, he would excel to a level like this and be such a great character. He's not fumbled once in a speaking role that I feel like the WWE has given him. And any sort of unique situation like this that they put around him, he amplifies and makes that much better.
Yeah. And I think also worth noting on this show that, you know, people that were, in kind of that whole scene, like Ilya and Gunther probably had just heard the news about Bad Bones, probably like right before they were going to air or such, because this news did not come out until like late in the day. And, you know, a lot of people probably that had worked with him. So great promo here by Gunther. I really like the empty arena aspect to it. Then we go to the clubhouse with the Judgment Day, and Priest walks in, and JD and Balor are getting ready for their tag title match, and Carlito admits he was behind the attack on Cruz del Toro. I love that we had like a fucking season of The Wire to determine the attack on Dragon Lee, and this one, it's, yeah, I did it. Priest explains, you know, we're not the APA. We're not your personal security. You need to earn your keep around here. And Ballard tells Priest before, as everyone leaves, man, I wish it was you out there with me, but I get it. You're the champion. And Carlito is in the background and he just walks up to Priest and makes a crack about the New York Knicks. And Priest did not appreciate this at all.
Mm-hmm. So continuing to sow some dissent here between Priest and other members, this time specifically with Balor, who is indicating some jealousy or at least like want for Priest to continue the tag team with him rather than being a singles champion. Carlito, you know, Priest, it's interesting to see them balance Priest and him having to be a baby face against somebody like a Drew McIntyre, while also being the leader of a heel faction. And so he has to like basically hate baby faces like Rey Mysterio and the LWO, but he has to also lead his group with like morals and some level of nobility, you know, where he doesn't want people to interfere on his behalf. He doesn't want Carlito taking advantage of the group as his own personal bodyguard. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see them balance that.
When you break it down, like, it does feel like it's a mess, although I don't feel it comes across that way.
It's well done.
They're trying to serve a lot of masters, I feel, with the different characters and the different...
But this is, like, the part of this new type of storytelling I like. They're trying to build multiple programs at the same time, and they're doing, I think, an effective job of it for the most part.
Well, and I bring it up, too, that they also have the curveball of, like, losing Rhea Ripley in the middle of all of this. Like, I'm certain that they were, like, all... Like, the post-WrestleMania stories on Raw, I think Judgment Day was a big focus of that, and Rhea being in the center of it all. So sure, there was a lot of pivoting on the fly here. Then we go to a PBA event where Baron Corbin is bowling and did pretty well here. He missed one pin. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good shot.
Through the opening, what do you call it? Throw? The opening bowl?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Did pretty well. He's a very talented athlete.
I'd be worried about doing this on like WWE television. They're like, okay, you're a bowler.
Hopefully not anymore. Yeah.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler in the back, and just boom, out of nowhere, Sonya Deville is back after 9 months after knee surgery. She walks in. She wants to talk to them. Shayna's like, no, and they just walk off. That was Sonya Deville's return.
She did show up in the background afterwards talking to these two, so she did get her conversation.
Okay. Yeah. The background stuff, it's tough. You got to have your eyes on the screen at all times.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like these three being paired together. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing what this new Deville character might be. I think she's been missed. And, you know, last time she was here, I think it was Vince in charge. So under a Levesque sort of creative direction, how is she going to be presented?
R-Truth and The Miz against Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. We had Dominic distracting, allowing Judgment Day to get the advantage on Miz. Then Miz is battling for the tag. Eventually, Truth and Balor get in, and Truth is doing his Cena spots. Applies the STF, but JD is in to break it. And then Balor and JD get planted in the center as Miz and Truth fire up with double five-knuckle shuffles. And Carlito pops onto the apron. Miz knocks him down. There's a lie detector on JD, but Carlito manages to get the foot on the rope for JD when suddenly out runs Braun the Giant. And he comes down, tossing Carlito into the barricade and chases JD into the ring for an AA by R-Truth, who pins him in 14 minutes and 37 seconds. And I thought, okay, relatively clever.
Yeah. Big reaction for the finish here. Awesome Truth certainly get a lot of mileage out of doing those Cena spots. They're incredibly fan-friendly champions, and they always manage to get a really good reaction here. I really... also enjoyed the reveal of Braun as the Andre the Giant spot that they teased earlier.
Becky congratulates Lyra and tells her, "You've got this." Cool. Lyra then walks down the hall, and there is Liv Morgan standing there and says, "I'm surprised you didn't have Becky help you earlier." And then she goes, "Speak of the devil," to indicate that Becky's behind her. And when Lyra looks, Liv cheap shots her, just strikes her and puts her down. And Lyra's like, "That Liv."
Well, I mean, it's a receipt for last week, right?
I guess so.
I'm liking this Liv Morgan a lot. She's showing a lot of attitude and comes across like she doesn't care, which is fun to watch.
Bronson approaches Sami Zayn in the locker room, says, "You should not be considered with Gable's mind games. I am soulless. I will use my body as a weapon, and I'm going to get my biggest payday yet." Yes, Saudi Arabia, you're probably going to get your biggest payday yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really pushing this mind, body, and soul sub-theme to this IC title picture.
On this episode, yeah.
Otis then walks in, and Bronson has left, and Zayn says, "Otis, I expected better from you. I would expect this from Gable, but not you. Maybe I was just wrong about you." And Otis says, "Sammy, I'm sorry." And Zayn, just like that, "I know you're sorry. You're a good guy, Otis. Gable is not." And he tells him, "I've been in those shoes before, and the sooner you stop listening to Gable and start listening to them," referring to the fans, "the better." And he's left Otis to think about all of this on that long plane ride over to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. I really like how they drew a parallel here between Otis and Gable and Sammy with the bloodline. It's actually a connection I never really thought about, and actually adds like a lot of interesting depth to this particular relationship between Sammy and Otis, besides just like, you know, two ginger beards. I'd love to see maybe this sort of expanded on if they can.
This could be in another world. This could be a brother tag team.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Becky Lynch comes out. She explains she has a lot of history with Liv, but Liv has never been able to beat her. She's just hell bent on revenge. So Liv interrupts and accuses Becky of gaslighting the WWE universe. Says, "I was punched in the face last week, so I simply came back for retaliation. And I don't care about these other women. I barely care about you, Becky. I just want to complete my revenge tour." Becky says, "Congratulations on finally finding a purpose here for yourself in WWE after 10 years. I knew my purpose from the very moment I started, and I wrote a whole book about my purpose." And says, "Liv, after you gain your revenge, then what?" Liv says, "It's funny you talk about everyone else, Becky, when you're the most selfish person in this company. You don't care about the fans or this place. All you care about is yourself." And she's mocking the what chant, which she was certainly having to battle here. Becky says, "You can't trick the people. These people know I do everything for them. And I challenge you to fight right now." And Liv teases running to the ring, but bails, stating she's going to do the smart thing and wait until Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Good energy in the segment. I like Liv's attitude. I think her promo was missing maybe like a more sort of like memorable, you know.
She's certainly got the confidence line and the delivery down, but her actual like messaging here, it's just a lot of like screaming at.
Yeah, it's like fake laughing. It's, you know, it's a lot of like
shorty witty lines that kind of not a lot of punch to them, to the promo.
Well, I'm missing the punch lines, you know, like I think what's making Drew work is like he's got zingers, you know, like things that you remember, things that will make you react. And I think Liv is missing some of that, at least this week.
Priest in the Judgment Day, they're upset over what happened. And Priest again tells Carlito he's got to earn his keep. And Priest tells JD that he needs to go to Adam Pearce and take a match with Braun Strowman next week. And Priest just looks at Judgment Day. "I can't even recognize us anymore." And Balor admits the wheels are falling off as he sends JD to go speak to Adam Pearce. So once again, problems in the Judgment Day. Continued. Xavier Woods is in the trainer's room, and he is cleared by the trainer. Kofi Kingston is so excited. He, too, is going to speak to Adam Pearce. And then Karrion Kross and Scarlett walk in and tell him there is always more time to turn things around.
Yeah, this is where I felt like are the authors of Pain and Karrion Kross going to re-enter Kofi? Like, could it be that Kofi's actually not cleared yet, but they're going to tell us that he's cleared only for the heels to attack him, re-injure his leg? I actually think that would be like a wonderful way to like generate heat for what do they call them? Final Testament.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Darby Allin should be looking out for Karrion Kross.
Ooh.
So this was long-term build here for New Day against the Final Testament.
Mm.
Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark against Katana Chance and Caden Carter against Ivy Nile and Maxine against Kairi Sane and Dakota Kai in a four corners match, with the winners getting a future tag title shot. So early on, Ivy Nile does a delayed vertical onto Kairi and gets struck by Chance and Carter. And then Chance and Carter do the keg stand, sending Chance to the floor onto everyone. That sets up the commercial. In comes Maxine, who delivers this spin kick that it did technically spin. It was not at a particularly high rate of speed, but a spin nonetheless. And then a kip up. Carter manages this like version, basically a sister Abigail here to Maxine. And then they hit the after party. But then they note that Chance is not the legal woman and gets yanked to the floor. So then we see the Tower of Doom executed by Ivy.
So let me tell you what was weird about all that. Okay, so Cole accurately points out that Chance was not the legal person. Dakota Kai blind tags Katana Chance, and Dakota now enters the match. The referee actually counts for Dakota's pinfalls, but Dakota is actually not the legal person because Chance was never the legal person. They carry on the rest of this match just like that. All of that was a disaster.
Dude, keeping track of the legal person here was just, it was one of many issues here.
Yeah.
So then they hit a Tower of Doom with Baszler taking the worst of it here. So she's laying on the mat, and it's to set up a spot where Katana hits a super Rana to Zoe Stark, and Stark was supposed to land on Baszler, but completely missed her. But to Michael Cole, he just called it like she landed on her partner. So then Maxine runs Carter into the barricade and actually gets some boos for this, with the idea that she's now showing some edge, and does the caterpillar onto Kai, and then into an ankle lock. And as she goes to the mat, Sane hits an insane elbow, but she can't go for the cover because this week, Kairi Sane has remembered that she is not the legal woman. And it's just like a mess as she is trying to get back to her corner. And then there's a blind tag. She gets caught in the Kira Fuda. And then the exclamation point, Zoe Stark hits a picture perfect phantom kick that misses Maxine entirely. They do a pop-up into a knee strike as Baszler pins her at 9 minutes and 11 seconds. I thought this was so sloppy. I just thought this match was a mess.
Yeah, it was very messy. I mean, from the get-go, it looked like they might have... I don't know if they were cut for time at some point or something, but like they just seemed to have a lot to do. And
lot of people to incorporate into this. There was just a lot of bodies here. And
the big sacrifice was the rule set. And possibly, you know, contact between the wrestlers with some of these moves as well. Unfortunate, you know, but they had a lot to juggle here.
Well, Braxton is with Ludwig Kaiser, whose whole gimmick now is just shit-talking Sheamus. That's it. He hopes that Jay takes the loss better than Sheamus did, and he just runs down Sheamus, who he calls a keyboard warrior, and says Sheamus has two options. He can either stay home to protect his legacy, or if he dares to come back, it'll just be for Kaiser to put him down like old Yeller. He's going to shoot this guy in the head if he comes back to work. And then Ludwig tags out, and in comes Drew. And literally, Way and I always make these jokes. This was literally his storyline today. He's wondering what he's doing here at Raw tonight. He's medically disqualified. He can't wrestle in the King of the Ring. And Adam Pearce doesn't want to use one of his top stars. So he was brought here and not put in a segment. So he's commandeering this interview so that he can say something. And he calls Priest a paper champion. I'm playing chess while Priest is just playing with Guyliner. And he warns Priest to focus on the title because I'm going to beat you soon. So he scripted his own segment, is how this went by storyline. I thought for sure he's getting involved in the main event because this would be pointless to just have him here for this nothing promo. But this was his whole involvement on the show, was this promo.
I think the point is to set up what's to come for Priest after King and Queen of the Ring, you know, and it just seems to call to attention maybe the style of promoting that they like to do these days, that where they're trying to juggle and give you teasers for what's to come afterwards. That's about as much as I could probably think.
Gable is joking around with the Creeds, so continuing to hint at that future alliance with the three of them. And Otis walks in and he said, "Where did you go?" He said, "I went to apologize to Sammy." And Gable can't believe it, but then realizes, oh, you're giving him a psychological edge. I like it. He tells Otis, "I've got your passport and your documents to go to Saudi Arabia, and we're going to win my IC title together." And Otis reluctantly agrees.
Mm-hmm. I think Otis is doing like a really good job of being sympathetic without really saying anything. He just kind of has that effect where you like him and you feel bad for him. This is where you saw Sonya with Deville and Shayna in the background, or Zoe and Shayna.
So this line about Gable having his passport and all his documents, are we led to believe that Gable might have a lot of his hooks in Otis? Like, does he control all his finances as well? I mean,
yeah,
he might not be able to leave Chad Gable.
We don't know what contract is on Otis's Alpha Academy contract. No.
Jay does a promo. He says, "There is no tomorrow. There is a tomorrow. There is unfinished business. I nearly had you last time, Gunther, and Gunther's going to catch a yeet down. And he's going to catch a crown." And he walks backstage and out into the arena for the main event with Gunther. And the focus of this match was Gunther ripping this man's arm apart and focusing on the right shoulder that he just destroyed nonstop. There's a Kimura that he applies on the turnbuckle, and Jay breaks out of it with a Samoan drop. And he fires up, but then Gunther unloads with chops, and he just destroys this guy. He's got this welt across his chest, which is pretty much the edge of Gunther's hand coming at him multiple times. He hits a power bomb, then into a Fujiwara armbar, but Jay's able to roll out. And then a release German is hit. Gunther goes to the top, lands the splash for a two count, and then takes his head off with a lariat. Back to the chops, and Gunther is just relentless here. And he then is warned by the referee. He's giving him to the count of five. And with the temporary distraction, Jay manages a spear. And he takes down Gunther and the referee, hits the Uso splash, and he struggles to get over, finally does. The referee comes to, counting to two. Gunther kicks out and then just torques the arm and applies a body scissors onto him for this choke, and puts out Jay in 17 minutes and 41 seconds. And we got the Raw special here, where the bell rang and we were off the air within like 10 seconds of this match ending. There was I don't think Gunther even got to his feet. Like, there was no like hero shot or anything. They were running right against the clock here.
A bit surprising, because I mean, are we just not doing overruns anymore?
They never do overruns on Raw.
Since when?
For a long time. They don't do overruns.
Is it just because it's 11?
Yeah, they got rid of the overruns a while ago, and they are pretty much the odd time. Like, there was a time maybe a month ago, they went like a minute over, and that was notable. They are always off by 11. Like, they are very hard and fast with that end.
Mm. Yeah, some people in the chat room saying that they had their endings cut off here. So
they might have gone a little past the hour here, but yeah. So they had no cushion here.
A really good match, I thought. You know, I remember having maybe a slightly stronger reaction to the February match, but I thought this was probably equally as excellent. Gunther's shoulder work is incredible. It's all so varied and all looks so very brutal. It's really just kind of outstanding. I think guys like Gunther and Dragunov, you know, who hit hard and bring a lot of energy in every move of their matches, they really add excitement to Jey Uso's style. Both of these two matches over the past 2 weeks have been some of like Jey's best matches during this run. So really, really strong match here.
Yeah, I thought Gunther had a great performance. I think Jay is still really trying to navigate into a singles run that I would not say this was on what like the higher level of some of Gunther's big matches, but I really did enjoy like the arm work throughout. Like, it was still engaging from that sense. But I still feel like the jury is out to where Jay Uso is going to be, say, 6 months from now. I think he's a work in progress as like that top babyface performer that can really be the lead guy on Raw. And he's being thrust into that position now with the injuries to Rollins and Punk. that, you know, he's certainly over. He's popular. But I don't feel he's made that ascension yet to where you feel like this is like the number one babyface.
It remains to be seen if he is just a temporary, you know, sort of top guy while CM Punk and Seth Rollins are out of the mix. Does he have that staying power where he could actually be a future world champion and you know, leader of the entire promotion? I think everything except for his singles, like high profile singles matches, has been amazing. You know, like his connection to the crowd, the entrance is incredible. I think his promos have gotten a lot better. But when it comes to like him leading in not wrestling a Gunther style match, but like Jey Uso style match, it falters just a little bit. But I mean, he is a very good wrestler, like part of one of the best tag teams ever. So I'm sure it only takes maybe a bit of adjustment.
Does this lean you towards one candidate over the other for the SmackDown final on the men's side?
Yeah. I think it'll be Randy.
That would seem to be the logical choice. I think an intriguing match to see of Gunther and Randy Orton.
Yeah. Tama versus Gunther makes no sense.
All right. Well, there you go. That was Raw. Certainly some lengthy matches on the show. There was some good wrestling on the show. There was also some bad wrestling on this particular 3-hour edition of the show. So that is their last domestic show, because now they head over to Saudi Arabia for SmackDown and for the King and Queen of the Ring on Saturday. So we will open it up to any super chats, and we have feedback on the forum to get to.
Let's check out the forum.
We'll start off with Anthony from Melbourne. Apologies, I haven't seen the show yet, so hopefully this is outdated, but wanted to touch on the debut of Kiana James last week on Raw. I'm not on social media, so my only real point of reference is the Post community, who I haven't heard bring this up, but is Kiana's character tone deaf, or is it just me? I'm usually the one that to say people are too PC when it comes to entertainment, but having a segment where Kiana is dressed in a revealing legal suit, claiming she doesn't hesitate, she adjudicates, in response to her superior telling her not to hesitate to call on me, just gave me creepy boss vibes. And if you didn't think it was meant to have a sexual connotation, R-Truth jokes in the workplace? Am I reaching to think a female legal character with sexual innuendo towards her boss is a parallel to Janelle Grant? If Vince was still in charge, I 100% see this as something he would deliberately do, but I thought the current regime is more self-aware to even risk people coming in to the same conclusion. I've seen nobody make this connection. I think this is a bit of a reach.
Well, the whole joke in that segment was R-Truth thought adjudicates sounded like user imagination, I guess. But I didn't sense any reason for her to say adjudicates other than for R-Truth to mistake it as that. I didn't think anything of it myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I just kind of see her playing pretty much the same character she was in NXT, and I really felt if people were making that connection, I don't think that would be a story that they would be leaning towards.
That's what I would sense as well.
Anyway, let's continue on.
All right, Brian from New Jersey says, so Mark Shapiro is very happy with MBS. That's nice. I'm very happy with not watching events held in the KSA. Some good wrestling tonight. I liked Lyra Valkyria versus Io Sky the most. Nice to see Sonya Deville back. It certainly was no AEW Revolution, which also took place in Greensboro. Which of these do you think you'll see on Saturday's event? Otis ditching Chad Gable, the unveiling of the Wyatt adjacent faction, both or neither? I'm going to say neither.
Yeah, I think you could really ride this Otis thing out for a bit longer than this Saturday. I think you could really build it up to something that, I wouldn't rush that. I don't think that this needs to do the break off this early, but it's probably coming in the imminent future when you've got the Creeds kind of ready to go as Gable's next stable. In terms of the unveiling of the Wyatt adjacent faction, I would hope just for the sake of this campaign that they are doing that they do drop a video where it directs you to something so that you can actually send people somewhere rather than just it debuts and you didn't know it was coming. Like part of that QR campaign the first time was the fact that, you know, you give people a date and a time, even though they didn't deliver on that one, that could work. And
but
I
they
think
did
that,
point you towards Extreme Rules, which did pay off.
At the end, they did, yes. Mm-hmm. So they did do that. I think that they... I certainly don't feel anywhere near the momentum for this one, but I do feel like you should give people that kind of countdown.
I think they need to ramp up the hints about specifically who we might be seeing. You know, if it's the return of, Eric Rowan, maybe drop that hint that much more clearly. Certainly if it's somebody like an Alexa Bliss that I think a lot more people will be that much excited over to see return, make it that much more clear in your hints that you're going to see Alexa Bliss return. That might ramp up, you know, a bit of extra hype. I don't think it's at the level right now where they're going to pay it off just yet. I think you might expect it at the end of the next pay-per-view cycle, which is what? What's the next one?
Scotland.
Okay. And then you got Germany after that.
No. Germany. It's the Scotland pay-per-view is June.
Toronto
is Money in the Bank. Then SummerSlam. Then Berlin.
Gotcha. Okay. Could it be Scotland?
Could be. It could be TV. Like you could unveil them at TV for a week. Yeah. We go to Muggin here. A rabid dog ran loose throughout the first hour of the show. From being positioned as a heel is the right move. The semifinals got plenty of time, and they delivered. The pop Otis will get when he stands up to the abusive Gable, who's been courting the Creeds and Ivy in recent weeks, will be massive. I couldn't ask for a better finish for the main event. Jay not tapping out protected him, and Gunther went over. It sure beats a crummy run-in finish. Let's see how Friday plays out.
We got Annie, who says, Quite enjoying how most of the angles on the show are shaping up. There are several overlapping character arcs, and most of the characters on the show feel interconnected. Good stuff. This show was so packed with stuff that the main event ran out of time. I'm enjoying the heel Gable character and his relationship with Alpha Academy quite a bit. The King and Queen of the Ring semis delivered in the ring. Good start to life for Valkyria. I'm still pleasantly surprised that Gunther is now one of the best promos in wrestling, and his match with Jay had me on the edge of my seat, dreading that Jay would win. However, I'm not a fan of Liv Morgan on the mic. She's not ready to be world champion.
Okay, well, there you have... we didn't even talk about that possibility of, like, Liv, like, winning the title, and that could set up, like, Lyra going for the title as well after Becky. There's two different directions that you could go. I just think you have a lot more options with Lyra winning this tournament than going with either SmackDown option.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, Lyra Valkyria going for the championship at like Clash at the Castle. Becky defending at Clash at the Castle, I think, is also really big as well, depending on who it is, I guess. But I don't sense a title change just yet.
All right, well, that's coming up on Saturday, one of two pay-per-views / PLEs this coming weekend. So again, we will be coming at you Saturday live here on the YouTube channel immediately after King and Queen of the Ring, which should be ending around 4 p.m. Eastern time. And then Sunday night, we'll be live here on the channel after Double or Nothing, which, I mean, God knows what time that show will be over. Let's hope midnight. Let's hope. So there you have it. Lots of stuff to talk about throughout the week. Way is back on Tuesday, 12:30 Eastern. Open phone lines on the Wellness Policy with Jordan Goodman. And the man I chatted today with, Neil Flanagan.
Oh, what did you guys chat about?
Nice discussion, just about life in general.
Oh, how very nice.
Yes. Wednesday, I've got myself and Brandon Thurston coming at you at 3, and then all the regular shows. You can follow the schedule up at postwrestling.com, and do yourself a favor, go check out the latest edition of the NWA podcast. Also, Collision Course, having you covered for Rampage and Collision from Saturday night with John and Kate, and a new Postmarks that dropped over the weekend with Racy JC, the expert on F1 and many things, stopping by with Bruce Lord and David Meyer. So a lot of great stuff to download, check out, and we will be back many times this week chatting about endless pro wrestling and whatever else. The Edmonton Oilers advancing to face the Dallas Stars. Who's your pick?
I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars.
Okay. I've got to go with the Canadian team, of course.
Oh, of course.
All right. That's it for us. Good night.